This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey. Call the cops.
This level of foolishness, hey. Enjoy.
Losers, in other words.
Hey. Now watch this drive.
Great ass!
Hey. Damn it.
Hey. Shisha.
Sicario.
Bruce, hey. Fucking Springsteen.
Damn it. Hey.
Yeah, people,
hey.
Are gonna die.
I wanna,
yeah, baby.
Oh, hey, y'all. It's me, Amy Grant. Well, rest in peace, Caroline. You had a good run.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin, and I'm here to have good Christian fun. That's what I'm here to do. I don't know about anyone else. Sometimes there's usually maybe another person here, and she's also here to have good Christian fun, but today it's just me hosting the show. So in the style of a Marc Maron-esque monologue at the top of his shows, for the first 10 minutes, to be clear, the part everyone loves the most and everyone cares about the most, where he's just like, I had to take my cat to get a heart surgery. It was terrible. That's what this whole first part is going to be. Because unfortunately, for reasons beyond my control and reasons beyond her control, Caroline could not make it today, which, as you could hear in the intro, once Amy Grant found out, she did jump to conclusions. And she was like, oh, I'll send in a memorial voice memo. So that's who you heard at the top. She said, hey, y'all, it's me, Amy Grant. Rest in peace, Caroline. You had a good run. But she's alive and she will be back next week, resurrected after 7 days, you know, which is not as efficient or speedy as Christ. And you would want a little bit more on the ball with that, but that's okay. So we're thinking of Caroline, thoughts and prayers to her, much prayers, and she will stay prayed up. Which, by the way, I don't know if you're, and I'm going to introduce my guest in a second, but I don't know if you're watching Mark Wahlberg's Stay Prayed Up videos, but he started with quite a spirit that is now in significant decline. The enthusiasm, the setup, the guest stars that he's getting involved in his Prayed Up videos, which are like the Hallow sponsored posts that he's doing, they're going downhill. And it feels like his heart's not in it anymore. So I wonder if we could give him a little GCF bump, get there in the comments and say, should I stay prayed up? Like, and really reach out to him and the brand Hallow, the Catholic prayer app. Good Christian Fun is the podcast where we talk about Christian pop culture, the music and the movies and the entertainment made for and made by Christians. But we're not here to make fun of you. And we're not here to make you go to church. We're just here to have fun. We're just here to talk about perhaps Canadian Christian punk, pop, rock, whatever you want to call it, from 20 years ago. And in honor of their debut album from 2003, when some of you were alive, and maybe some of you weren't. I don't know. I really do wonder how many Gen Z listeners we have. But we're talking about the band FM Static and their debut album, What Are You Waiting For? And I can't do this alone, even though I've been doing this alone. And there is a certain power in that, talking to yourself, right? Something we've all gone through. But the thing is, we don't usually do it with an audience of anybody besides our pets. And even then, they're like, okay, I'm sick of this shit. If you're anything like my pet. So I can't do this alone. I really need to introduce my special guest right now. And I believe she can hear that intro audio. Friends and folks, she is a podcaster. She is a writer herself. You may know her from her own show, Untitled Dad Project. Give it the hell up for Jonyell Kastner!
Yay!
Yes.
Oh.
Here we are. Let's go.
This is my
This is my third time.
That's your, yeah, it's your Trinitarian appearance.
And it,
yeah.
And it never doesn't feel great.
Good.
To be introduced that way.
Listen, 291 episodes in, I'm glad that we found a song that we could use for all of them.
My heart is racing. Like, it increased my adrenaline. I feel, who is that again?
Oh, I think we all know who that is. That is the queen of Christian pop herself, Amy motherfucking Grant. That is
right. Okay, right.
That's her Sing You Praise the Lord, a song by Rich Mullins that he wrote, yeah. Then she did a cover of. Yeah.
Yes. I feel like I just like lost all my like Christian kid cred right there, but I'll earn it back. I was just busy listening to the angstier.
That's like
music.
You saying, who's clearly that guy that died on the cross for our sins?
And who's that, like, one?
Jesus Christ is his
who's
name.
Who's the one, like, that's the dove? I actually do remember, like, a couple years ago with my mom, I was with like a whole other group of hers that are all like incredibly devout, and we were doing like the face up game.
Oh yeah, whatever. Heads up, sure.
Heads up, yeah.
You have the identity of a person, it's on your forehead, everyone can see it but you.
Yeah, and it was like the Christian one. I was like, oh, Jehoshaphat, like, oh, blah, blah. It was like the Bible one. And my mom was like shocked that I still remembered all of this. And I was like, you don't think that it's stuck? Like, just because I'm now this like deconstructed whatever, like, it's still in there.
You know, I am a little surprised it's stuck. I might be more on your mom's side just because there are certain things, there's turns of phrases and certainly scripture, chapter and verse that stuck in there for me. But in terms of like the specifics of, yeah, Jehoshaphat, who was the general at Jericho? What were they getting into in Judges, etc.? The names, the proper names and noun stuff, I would struggle with a little bit more maybe than someone with a mind like yourself.
I think it's because they were characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember the character. Like, this was my first, like, that was my Lord of the Rings, was like the actual Bible.
yeah. It's a lot of people's first Lord of the Rings, actually.
Yeah. I would flip to all the chapters that had like a woman's name in the title, like Ruth or Esther, just to be like, what's going on with the ladies?
Uh-huh.
Like, that was just my version of that. But I'm very happy to be here with you, Kevin. Just
the two of us. You know, and people have been, we get feedback on the podcast all the time. And one of the big pieces that, you know, we've been listening to recently is like how to make the podcast better. Like, you know, 6 years in, you still want to grow, you still want to learn, evolve, and change. And I think for us, the two biggest pieces of feedback we've gotten consistently is drop Caroline and do episodes over Zoom.
Amazing. Listen to your people.
That's where the juice is.
You're nothing if not a feedback king.
Here's what I'll say for real though. Is I think Zoom is not bad if it's one-on-one.
Oh yeah.
Here's where it's a struggle. I think or even if everyone's divided into their own place. I did a podcast recently a couple weeks ago where all the participants were on Zoom and it was pretty fun. I had a great time. It was like a 2-hour podcast. I'll shout them out, a podcast called I've Been Meaning to Listen to That, in which I did talk about a Bruce Springsteen album that meant a lot to me.
Nice.
No surprise. And I did threaten the hosts that I would never come on the show again if they didn't see him tomorrow at Wrigley Field, because they were recording there outside of Chicago or in Chicago. And they did. And bullying works. And they saw Springsteen before I did this year, which bums me out. But I think it's tough sometimes with the setup, because I want to be in the room with Caroline always. When we have Zoom guests, it's hard because it can feel like a little, oh, we have this camaraderie in here, and then you're just like beaming in. And this happened, I did a couple episodes. I remember last summer I did an episode in Portland with Arlo Weyerhaeuser, our friend up there. And they were in the room with me, and then Caroline was on Zoom, and I was like, oh, is this how it feels like? You know, like on the opposite end of it. Although I continue to have a great time. So one-on-one, I think each of us in our discrete locations and locales, that works. I mean, has this been your experience doing Zoom stuff, podcast stuff, room versus Zoom? Where do you land?
Yeah, for the most part. I land, like, it's fine. I just sort of... Like, I used to think of myself as someone, like, charming and, like, socially capable. But in the during the pandemic, like, everything moved to Zoom. And my ability to, like, anticipate the ends of other people's sentences is apparently, like, really poor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, like, constantly interrupting people, constantly feeling like I'm missing social cues. And then I was, like, very saturated on TikTok. So for a while, I was, like, I'm probably one of these women that I'm seeing on TikTok that like is undiagnosed on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And that will explain, like, and I moved cities and I'm like trying to make friends in a new city, which is like so vulnerable. You're like out here dating for friendship, which is so much harder than if you actually have the promise of romance on the end. And I was like convinced. I was like, this is an explanation for like why I'm so like socially not feeling like I connect. And I took the test and it was like, if you're like 120 points or over, it's really unlikely that you don't have something on the spectrum, blah, blah, blah. And I took it and I got like a 16.
A 16? Okay, you tested way like, below what you thought you were not going to.
And so I was like, oh no. So this is just like how it feels to be me doing my best with like all the tools available to me.
Yeah,
in this era. Yeah, so I just feel like I feel less socially capable on Zoom, but I don't feel that way with you.
I think that's nice. I think the because we've been able to, I've told people this before. I see you because, Janyelle, you live in New York, but I've seen you more in the last 2 years than friends of mine that live in Los Angeles County, but on the West Side or in Marina Del Rey or Playa Vista or Santa Monica. I see you more. I've seen you like five or six times
I'm
this
so
year.
Honored.
It feels like that. Isn't that nice?
I can tell that our like intimacy level has increased because like the first time I did GCF is when I met you. And I remember like I had like a full face of makeup. I like picked out an outfit that was like, I will look elegant, but like not trying too hard. And then like drove up to Caroline's apartment and was like nervous and excited. And now I'm on like day 8 of a sinus infection and I'm wearing my worst yoga pants.
And that's intimacy. That's
and
how
that's
you build
love.
It.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about the, to get back to the friendship piece of it, is what do you feel like is maybe a skill set that was inculcated in you during church time that you're now using to your advantage when it comes to looking for platonic love in all the wrong places in Brooklyn?
I think what's hard is that I feel like I'm like unlearning all of that. And that's the problem. Like my sparkliest self was my church self because like all that mattered was like how other people felt about me, like making sure that they liked me, making sure I was like reaching them, making sure I was connecting to them. That was like, I had like a whole performance trauma thing, right? Like I was like performing for like love and to prove that I belonged and that like, you should think I'm a good girl, despite the fact that like I don't have a dad and I'm the daughter of a single mom who had me out of wedlock, like all that stuff, like yada, yada, yada. And then in the process of like unlearning all of that, I've like grown to realize like, oh, like the Dolly Parton quote, I might not be everyone's cup of tea, but I'm some people's shot of whiskey.
Ooh, like, say that.
If I'm authentically myself, like some people will like love me all the way. And like the Tumblr quote, I'd rather be like loved for who I am. I know. Hated for who I am than loved for who I am not. Like all that stuff, like therapy, therapy, therapy has left me this person who's like capable of being like much more authentic and capable of asking myself, like, do I like the person I'm talking to? Which is like wonderful. But then like, I kind of miss being sparkly. It's like actually easier to make like really shallow acquaintance when you're like a little bit disassociated and like tap dancing and like, you know what I mean? It's like easier to like, I don't know, like start from scratch. From there than like what I am now, which is this like big, open, more vulnerable, more honest, more authentic creature that I just feel a little more, I don't know, a little less likable. But that's okay because I think I'm far more lovable. Like I am far, I had to actively learn how to receive love. That was like the work of my 20s, was to like let people actually love me.
Sure.
As opposed to like make sure they all like me. Oh, I guess one thing that I had was like the like lovely part of being like a youth group leader from like when I was like 13 onwards is like scanning the room and being able to like notice immediately like who's not included, like who's being left out, which I think was a lovely gift, like being able to kind of spot the person who's not
the
engaging
losers.
Or being engaged with. Yeah. Spot the people you're going to minister to. Except for now, I just want them to be my friend and see like you're alone too. Maybe we could like be alone together. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to like condescending to the person alone, now I'm like, oh, I'm the person. You know what it is, Kevin? I'm the person alone.
Now it's you.
Oh my God. Oh.
Do you think that's true? I don't know.
I might start crying. That's exactly what it feels like. To like move to a new city and like I have some very, very deep friends here.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to make more like industry friends. I'm trying to create a new artistic community. I'm trying to find artists. And to not have like a shared context already. Like, I don't go to school with anybody here. I don't like work with anybody here. I'm not like family friend, you know, like all the things that would bring you to a youth group. I'm just like showing up on a Wednesday night and like trying my best. Oh my God.
No, but you know, this is real.
That's exactly what it feels like.
There's this TikTok that I was watching the other day that talked about the difference between adult friendships and friendships at that point of our life that you're talking about when you felt the most sparkly. And one of the big parts of it was in the sense of the difference is when you meet up with your adult friends, you're reporting about your life. And then when you're together in those shared contexts, when you're younger, you're living your lives together. And maybe you're debriefing afterwards of, that was weird, right? Or that was really fun.
Yeah.
But that's a wild difference. Like you, for example, you and I don't live our lives together. We kind of show up and report for three hours at a time and then go separately. So even that just fact of the matter difference, that's completely irreligious. It has nothing to do with like youth group stuff or anything of that nature. That's just a fact of adult friendship that I feel like is kind of unavoidable, right? Unless you literally do like the classes and you say you're like trying to create an artistic community out there. Unless you do that successfully on a regular basis, it always kind of stays in that zone of, well, here's what happened to me this week. Or like even the stuff I was saying off mic. I was like, I got a lot to tell you about, you know, that's still, you weren't there for it. I'm still relaying it to you to a degree. So that's always going to be a little intimacy gap, I think.
Yeah. There's something nice about that, though, for you, because I exist outside of, like, your regular friend group.
Oh, yeah.
And so all these people are, like, characters for me. So, like, I just get left on, like, the, like, season finale of, like, one of your relationships. Then I get to find out, like, next time, you know.
We may be getting some new writers soon. We may reboot with half the cast soon. I don't know. We got to find out. Yes, but that is a different. But your memory is also very good. So I never feel like you're catching up or saying, which one is that guy again? The one with the hair? Like, you always know. You know, you see, you follow from afar.
Yeah, but shockingly, like, I don't remember other things. Like, the space that should be, like, the names of most celebrities.
Mm-hmm. Like, Yehoshaphat?
Is taken up by Yehoshaphat and, like, that one girl that was, like, a little mean to Kevin 3 years ago. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's... That's what I'm storing in there. But I actually, like, it'd be more useful to remember, like, the name of any film ever.
Oh, I think it's so much nicer to remember the names of people who had minor infractions in your friend's life than...
Who, I guess so.
Jake Gyllenhaal was in Wildlife, directed by Paul Dano. Who cares? That's for the Letterboxd bros. You don't need to be that person. You can be the person that remembers, and that's your gift.
Yeah, perhaps less useful on pop culture podcasts, though, but I'll do my best.
Oh, maybe. Have you watched The Bear season 2 at all?
I haven't. I have been... Something's wrong with me.
Uh-oh.
Which I guess is like the theme so far of this episode. I am so afraid to start anything that has the capacity to actually hurt its characters. I'm really afraid to start anything right now that I don't have, like, parameters around, like, the depth of emotional impact could happen to somebody. And The Bear, it seems like people actually have real, incredibly intimate things that matter to them that might not happen to them and they might be crushed.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like the vibe I'm getting. And so I'm, like, so scared to start it because I just don't know that I'm ready to, like, make those things happen to them.
So anything with, how do you say, dramatic stakes...
Yes. Anything that actually... Well, okay, no, but, like, if I know the parameters, like, if you start, like, any procedural, like, you know the parameters of what's going to happen. Like, you know who's, like, someone could get murdered, is going to get murdered, et cetera, like, if I know the circle around them, like, if I already knew kind of what could happen to all the characters in The Bear, I think I could start it. It's just actually getting to experience it. I don't know. It feels very risky to me right now. I would like to, though.
There's a relatable feeling to that. That's how a lot of people felt watching Friday Night Lights, where it's like, if anything happens to Saracen, I will be so upset. I'm so invested in this. Man, you feel a protective energy about it. Oh, if you had seen it, I was going to do 10 minutes about, like, how season 2 is about love is remembering things about each other, remembering things as care. remembering things, like details, but then also big picture. But I will revisit that essay point at a later date.
Thank you.
No,
I'll start it. I would like to. There's something about an omelet with potato chips that I saw on TikTok.
Oh,
and I was like, oh, this feels gentle.
No,
I'd like to live in a world where they make omelets for each other.
Season two is all the flavors of gentleness and also the kind of aggressive stress of season one as well. it's both at the same time. But there's some episodes where it's like, hey, we're just making pastries and vibing here.
I would love that.
Or interrogating the creative process. You can absolutely do it. It's precious with its characters the way that you would want it to be. But making friends, I feel you did have to cancel on us last week. And then we rescheduled today, which is so nice. But you're still recovering. And I feel so bad. I feel so bad that I'm making
you. No, you're fine. I just need to blow my nose. What's the best way to do that? Just like, I'll
edit it out. You good? Oh, God. It's all over the screen. Oh, no. I didn't know that was possible. No. New Zoom feature. No, you're all good. You're all good. Yeah. I mean, listen, when was the last time we checked in? We talked about redeeming love. We talked about redeeming love at the beginning of last year. So that was a year and a half ago.
Yeah. That was like, I thought this was like a charming thing from my childhood, but turns out it's really traumatic. So I can't wait to find out what ways in which FM static is actually.
I don't know if we're going to be able to.
I don't think so. I it was such a like important, lovely album. It was 2003. I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
Like this was my like straightening my hair, like burn CD that I had in my big round silver boombox CD player.
Mm-hmm. It was a round boombox. You're talking about the one where it's like a CD on top.
Yeah, CD at the top, and it's like a roundish kind of boombox stereo system. And then I would put this in, and I would get ready, and I would straighten my hair to go to like home group or like meet up with Courtney or whatever. And this was I don't know. It's really special to me.
What is the design appeal of everything from the late 90s and early 2000s where it's just like, what if there was a bubble coming out of it? And you think about those IMAX with the absolute dump truck, neon, orange. And then the boombox is the same where it was so like, what if it looked like it was really full and it just eaten a big meal? And that's what looked good as tech aesthetic at that time.
Our stuff was swollen and our women were anorexic.
Hey-o.
It's like things are round and big and people are very angular.
And now, you know, culture, you know, time is a flat
swings
circle.
Back around. Yeah.
Wait, before we talked about the album, I wanted to talk about something else. There was something I was thinking about in terms of like friend making and your journey in Brooklyn. I will say I went to a church last time I was in New York. I didn't talk about it on this show. Because I was very late for that church. It was a church up in Manhattan whose name I'm forgetting, so I can't dox it at all, thankfully. But it was in the round in this old little chapel on some sort of like Christian college campus. Very beautiful architecture. Usually meets in like the big old chapel. But it was the summer, so they had to do it in the air-conditioned one because the AC didn't work so well in the big chapel. The music was really lovely. Oh, and Shauna Nyquist spoke. That's the name of the woman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, that's scratching an itch from my teen knowledge. What is her...
What's her whole deal?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you right now.
Just off the top of your head?
Yeah,
was
you
she
know,
a musician?
No. She's an author. She wrote books called Bread and Wine, Present Over Perfect, Cold Tangerines, Bittersweet.
Oh, Cold Tangerines. Okay, that's where it came across my like women in church radar. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe I should try. I can do it. I can do it, Kevin.
You can do what? Make some cold tangerines.
To a church,
do you want to? Church. Do you care? It's okay if you don't.
No, I actually really do, which is an interesting place to be in. I'm working on this new project about evangelicalism, and the reason is because I realize like the tagline is I want to believe. When I look around, I don't really want to belong, but ultimately, like I really do want to understand.
You don't want to belong in what sense?
like when I look around at other Christians, yep. I'm like, I don't know if I want to belong to you. Like, I don't know if I can trust.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't know if I can trust saying that I belong to you. Like, I don't know at what point the shoe is going to drop when, like, in this institution or group or whatever, the bad thing will happen and I'll be like, now I can't, whatever, which is not a special feeling. I think like almost everyone, that I know feels that way, mm-hmm. To some degree, but I do feel this like desire to, I don't know, have something bigger than myself that I like am a part of. I used to feel so, it was so clear to me where, how to fill needs. It was like you were in a community and you were like, oh, the McCormick's dad lost their job. And so like, that's where the need is. It's like, we're all going to put our money towards there, like help them. Like I knew how to be a person that was like useful to make the world more beautiful. Sometimes at expense to myself, but at an expense that ultimately felt great because like being of use to people creates pleasure. That's how we were made. Like every self-help book, like the, every single thing goes down to
well, that's how we were made. Do you think that's true of most people, that like filling need creates pleasure?
Maybe even not filling need, like unhealthy Enneagram 2, whatever, but just like being a part of something bigger than yourself, like working towards something bigger than yourself that comes at some sort of sacrifice. And so I just feel surrounded by unsurmountable pain all around me. And I don't feel like I have a way to help, to participate. I haven't found, like, I was looking for like various nonprofits to help work with, but there's like the same institutional whatever, like when am I going to find out what's wrong with you all or like what your founder did, et cetera.
I know charitynavigator.org can only go so far, but it's very heartbreaking, those stories.
Yeah. So I do miss feeling like I'm a part of a community and knowing specifically like my friends who are part of a church, around here, like when like a bunch of refugees were dropped off, and like up in, where was it? Hamptons, somewhere like absurd in New York. They were like part of a church infrastructure network that was able to like actually bring them into their home and like make sure they had a safe place to be and like get settled and all of that. And I was like, oh, that like infrastructure is so important. And like, I would like to feel part of a community that can do that. But then I have to just get over all the other things. I have to start the season of the bear because I know it will be good for me. I have to
More importantly, you need to start this season of a new television show. Then you're right in that it does feel a little chaotic to build the roadmap yourself in terms of creating community and infrastructure. And sometimes I feel like this. Sometimes I feel like it's most functional when I'm stealing out of their playbook, out of some evangelical, not the bad stuff, but the evangelical playbook of, we're going to have this kind of rhythm and people are going to feel like this and there will be a greeter and there's going to be food in this way, which I guess you could say like the evangelical playbook is stealing from other people. Yeah, it's basic like human hospitality and whatnot.
Ancient human hospitality and purpose making.
But I'm thinking, of course, of my own anecdotal experience and what was helpful for me when I was the little loser at youth group, that Angela Marvin, the track star, came over and talked to, you know, back in the day.
Bless her.
You remember that stuff, you know? Like you do. That's, those are candid moments.
I mean, I was Angela Marvin though. And so like, I had a lot more like confidence and comfort in those environments. But now I'm little Kevin.
You're little Kevin.
I'm little Kevin.
Yeah.
No, I am. I think what's like weird too is I'm realizing like where I feel most comfortable in spirituality is like at the very edge of center, like at the very edge of belonging, like kind of pushing the boundaries of like who gets to be included and what do we actually believe. Like I feel very I work very well like pushing the boundary of the thing.
Mm-hmm. How do you
that's
mean?
Where I feel like if there is a community, I feel very useful now being the person who's like asking the questions that asks the community to like think more about their values, to think differently about their values, like kind of like pushing, like if there's a circle that is like a community of people who are believers in God, I like being on the edge, kind of like pushing to widen that circle. I don't know how to describe other than that. That's like how it feels to me.
Mm-hmm.
But that requires like somebody being in the center. Like that requires somebody making a circle for me to exist. Like
I know what you mean. I absolutely know what you mean in the sense of like...
There's some community organizing like PhD who like knows exactly the terms that I'm referring to.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah. But like I used to be like at the center of the thing. Like I'm at the center of the mission. I'm at the center of the goal. I'm at the center of the movement. And then I realized like I actually will die here.
Yeah. And sometimes it is more comfortable to be whether the visual is like right at the perimeter of whatever the movement or their organization is. Or I think about the visual because I would embody it sometimes of standing in the back of the room where you can see everything and you're not sitting down with everybody. So you could leave if you wanted to. And maybe you have a cup of coffee and but you're also perhaps you have you're not towing the party line, but you have a healthy skepticism about it all.
Yeah.
And you can be like, well, some of this is stupid and silly.
Like I haven't sat down, so I haven't checked that I accept the terms and conditions.
Yes.
But I'm still here. So I get credit for being here, but I haven't checked the box. Yes, that was me for when I went through my church trauma, whatever, the end of college for me. I spent my 20s sitting in the back as much as possible. That's what I did. Until eventually I remember I went to this small progressive little whatever church that I really grew to love. But I was sitting in the back and eventually they were like, hey, we need volunteers for the kids. You do not have to feel called by God. You do not have to serve out of a servant's heart. We literally just have a bunch of kids and no volunteers because everyone who goes to church here has church trauma. And I was like, oh, that's fair. As much as I'm feeling angsty about belonging and all the stuff that's so emotionally charged and feels very spiritually charged, you also just people need to help each other in order to exist in groups. And so I volunteered for the children's ministry. Actually, do you know what? When I did the Hannah Brown first GCF, it was right when I was starting to do that. Because remember, I cried.
Oh, yeah.
And I told you guys, I am starting to do this. I am starting to open myself up to participating and serving in a faith community.
And how'd it go?
I cried a bunch.
While serving?
My first day, all the volunteers meet to be here's the deal, what age groups, whatever, whatever. And while we were all talking, I was like, hey, and they were like, oh, this actually happens a lot. Yeah, okay, great. And so I cried. And then it's just fourth and fifth graders who need someone to look at them and see them and care that their dog is sick and that their grandma died and that they have a big soccer game coming up and they're not sure if they want to play soccer anymore.
Oh, so what age range is this?
I was with fourth and fifth graders.
Okay.
Preteens, which is shocking to think that that's preteen, but it is.
But they're people that point.
They are people.
Yeah.
And that's actually all it is. And I remember one of our early lessons was God loves me, so I don't have to be afraid. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah, I think that's my theology.
Yeah.
I think my theology is fourth grade. Whatever the fourth grade lessons are, that's as far as I've gotten in terms of what I know to be true. I believe there's something bigger than me that and that force is loving and benevolent. And so I don't have to be afraid. I think that is that I can stand on. And that is so really, I actually just ended up doing kids church for a while. And that was my church.
Yeah, I
feel kids lesson. And I'd be like, that preach that that hits. That's my lesson.
My version of that was not with children at all, but I remember volunteering and participating in a low worship band in college for a year, whatever year that was, my last year of college in Austin. And I did not go to the church at all otherwise. I did not participate in the church otherwise. But so my only in to it was via the band. And it was these two brothers in the band. One was a drummer and one was the kind of front man. I believe his name was Reese. And it was such a warm, sweet little presence and energy that he cultivated within the group. One of the other bandmates was my friend Ashley, who I'd known for years at that point through high school stuff. And then we went to college at the same time. And I remember that being getting that experience of the church and what creativity was and in service to another thing. And even the little front person was not egocentric. He was very gentle and meek in spirit. I was like, oh, this is actually kind of what you're saying. It's like, oh, I've reached the ceiling of what I want from this institutionally. This is it. I actually don't need to, it's good to be involved in this, but also get involved. I was like, this is what it is for me.
Yep.
And
this is it.
I feel very satisfied. I don't feel like that's a counterfeit version or an insufficient version. I think that's good.
No, not at all. This is more than enough, actually. And that's actually beautiful. I find that quite relieving to think of it that way. That is abundance. This is more than enough to just have connection and meaning and to be of service to each other. And I think a lot of people have that outside of church. But I do miss it. Okay. Thanks for
I'm not giving you the hard sell to go Kevin. Back. I'm not pro people going back to church. I'm not anti people going back to church.
You're just gently holding space for me to like kind of realize that like when something is, I don't know, if I could get over myself and find small corners of abundance, like I think it would be lovely to then be able to facilitate small corners of abundance.
Sure.
Which is something I didn't know that, I don't think I knew how important it was when I was doing it, when all I had was a feeling of being confident and purposeful when I was like a teenager, you know? When I was the person who was integrated in her youth group trying to talk to the visitor.
But you were.
I was. I'm sure I was a nice part of some people's church experience. I'm also sure I was part of some people's trauma.
Same.
But yeah.
Isn't that funny to think about? It's like, because it's funny to have this like critical distance and like, oh man, the church really messed us up. And it's like, well, you were the church, so you messed somebody up.
I know. Yes, that was me. I feel this like desire to make penance for him. There was a bumper sticker I saw recently that said, just said, I'm sorry for what I said as an evangelical teen.
Damn, what a specific.
I know.
I mean, yeah.
Specific, true. But universal. Uh-huh. I think a lot of people feel that way. But I do think this is a period of me getting to like experience like why it matters to have abundance and be a recipient of other people creating abundance and being generous towards me and like letting me into their corners of belonging around this, you know, cold me, New York City, whatever. And then I can be a part of creating and facilitating abundance for others again, but this time with like knowing what I'm doing.
I think so.
It matters.
You might be on your way to sparkling again like you used to.
I don't want to sparkle like I used to. I want to sparkle in a different way, I think, but yes.
Yeah, what was the color of it before? What's the color of it going to be in the future?
It was, what a good question, Kevin. What a good therapy question.
And where do you feel that in
your
body?
I think it was just a little Disney princessy. It was like the smile came first and then everything followed, which physiologically is true. Like you do cheer yourself up. But the smile came first and everything followed. And I think I could sparkle in a way that like maybe has more of a capacity for stillness and quiet and for things to be hard and for that to be okay. Like my survival instinct was to like find a way for everything to be better. My therapist actually said to me once, she was like, I don't actually think you're a people pleaser, which is like shocking. She was like, I think you just like were trained by people pleasers.
That's interesting.
Like, I don't think it's your nature. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a version of sparkling that could be, I don't know, a little more authentic and has like a, and it has space for like grief and sadness and bad feelings and doesn't have to always be smiling.
Yeah. It doesn't favor the extroverts above all.
Ooh, yeah, that's true.
Or filling the space and whatnot. As if that would be the worst thing to happen.
Okay, wish me luck. I'll just go do that real quick.
Okay, well, let's let you go do that, and we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's auraframes.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time to dive into the topic. Come on, let's go. So that was Stephen Curtis Chapman.
I know. I know, Kevin. I was there. I just don't remember names because I remember the names of the people in your life.
I know, which is nice and it's better. And you remember the names of FM Static coming to you out of Toronto, not too far from you. Trevor McNeven, Steve Augustine or Augustine. What if his name was Steve Augustine? Like the theologian.
He would have been the king of the Reformed Bros.
If you like Good Charlotte, you may also like FM Static and their debut album. What are you waiting for? You were talking about you would listen to this while getting ready for what events? For home group, you said.
For home group, for church. We were at church basically every night of the week, except for Tuesdays. And that's when we watched Gilmore Girls, which mm-hmm. you wouldn't know anything about.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
No. But yeah, like every night of the week, it was like either singles ministry for my mom or like choir for my mom or the puppet ministry. There was just
Did you do puppet ministry at all? Because shockingly, I never did. And I think I would have been of service.
I think your whole life would have gone a completely different way.
I think I'd be happy right now.
I think you'd be Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, even though it's been debunked. You would have been like the youngest age possible to find the thing you're most passionate about, and you would have had 10,000 hours in by the time you graduated.
100p.
Ugh, I want to see that Kevin's life. I think he's doing great.
So do I. But the music ecosystem, because we've never talked about music with you. I mean, no. In passing. But we did The Bachelor, and we did freaking Redeeming Love.
Redeeming Love.
But we I'm sure you gave a little rundown of just like your music diet generally. And I actually want you to talk about non-Christian music too in high school that you were into, if you were into.
Yeah, music. I mean, my first CD was Stephen Curtis Chapman, Diving In. So that's part of why I knew.
Oh yeah, the one where he's speechless, where he's like he's got the Steve Jobs turtleneck.
Wait, no, is that the green one?
Yeah,
it's the green one.
Yeah, that's the green one.
That was my first CD. My second proper CD though was the Josie and the Pussycat soundtrack.
Yeah, a movie that has held up phenomenally well.
It is so good. Mm-hmm. I rewatched it like 2 years ago, and I was like, "This is what's the word? Nascent."
It absolutely is. That's the right word for it.
So nascent. They were ahead of their time. It was an incredible film.
Sure.
So I loved like that. So I loved like anything like female interiority. Mm-hmm. Like I'm actually a rock star. I'm very powerful and no one quite knows.
What
it.
If so I was, said like, super... I was really into female exteriority?
Oh.
That's kind of my wheelhouse.
FBI. So I was like Josie and the Pussycats, Super Chick. I loved Super Chick, which was Christian. That sort of thing. And then FM Static was because our church was on like whatever that circuit was in the early aughts were like random Christian bands would like travel church to church. Our church was really big in the aughts. It was like pretty mega churchy, and then it, like slowly died over the 2000s, honestly, into the 2010s.
And this is in Dallas.
Really sad. Yeah, in Dallas. And so we were like one of the stops. And so I'm not sure if FM Static was a stop or if it was just like one of the CDs around.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a Burn CD though. So like a lot of my musical tastes, unshockingly, were just dictated by like the guys who were older than me in youth group.
Sure. Oh yeah.
No, and we're like slightly too old to be hanging out with. So like my references were like, I remember like being able to quote like Mystery Men when I was like 16 or 17, which is like not a film I should have seen.
Yeah, that's not something you care about.
Some of my tastes for that. So like, that's how I got into Coldplay when I was like a little bit younger than I think the normal girl gets into Coldplay. But that was sort of my music universe, was like CDs that people burned for me. Because I didn't have like a good computer.
Did you have complicated ethics about that? About the idea of like, well, it's a burnt CD.
Not at all at the time. Okay. It didn't even occur to me.
Yeah.
The people making music were just people making music. It was like, it was on the radio. I would listen on the radio and like record onto my like cassette tape.
But yeah.
To find. And so then like burning a CD didn't feel any different at all to me. And maybe I was just like also deeply hungry because like, we didn't have cable. We didn't have like very good internet. So like whatever people could like burn or make for me became my religion. Like at home listening by myself like over and over and over again to the same CDs.
Yeah. People don't understand. I mean, we lived through that time period where music was had value to now it's a public utility almost.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, oh yeah, pay to have the water on. And
if you don't have siblings, if you don't have siblings, like there was no other like taste or culture coming into my life. So like the people at church, the people at school, like whatever they were into and gave me like became. And I honestly miss like how it felt to know like every lyric of everything I was listening to all the time on repeat. Like to be like 13 and just to be a sponge and to love one thing or to have someone introduce one thing is like such a precious, like scary thing. Like, do you ever think about that? Like, you're like 13 and like, because you watched Princess Bride, you will now have like an incredibly specific like sexual fantasy as an adult.
Yeah,
it could have been like a different movie.
Yeah.
But it wasn't on that Friday night. And like, here you are. That has like formed your personality now.
Maybe this is the old man in both of us, but just the idea of like a non-algorithmic recommendation infrastructure and the human touch of, well, I want to be like my big brother who loves Five Iron Frenzy for some reason.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll listen to Five Iron Frenzy now.
Yeah.
Does the truism stick for you that people say oftentimes, I guess we're going to find out with this album, oftentimes the music that you end up loving the most in high school is for life and that doesn't change that much over the years.
Yeah, I think so. My youth pastor like played The Killers and I was like, what is this? This is a revelation. And so like The Killers will never leave. I mean, that's a pretty like, that's not a very difficult band to love. They're pretty like unobjectionably like talented and interesting and like doing something cool at the time they were doing it. So that's not like wild or avant-garde at all, but like they will hold a place in my heart like forever. And that was like 16, 17, 18, 19.
Yeah, same for me, for them. Have you seen them live yet? Did you go see them?
I did. I went on my birthday. I think I went for like my 28th birthday, 27th birthday, like 2017, 2018. And I was surrounded by 45-year-old men.
Yeah, it is. Although I will say, maybe this is just my experience going to too many Springsteen shows. When we saw them here in LA, I was like, man, there's a lot of different kinds of people here.
Oh,
and there were
awesome.
Like oldies and youngies as well. And people of different races.
I was also like sitting back. Like I was in the like, kind. I think like I kind of have trouble with my back sometimes seats. Mm-hmm. So I think that might be why it was all the 45-year-old men. That's what it was. But FM Static for me was like, I don't know, for me it was pivotal because it was like the first time I was imagining or hearing boys, Christian boys no less, pine for a girl because they really like her incredibly specifically. They incredibly specifically like that, like, she was drinking Fruitopia or that, like, her favorite day was Earth Day or she liked Black Caddies, listened to Puff Daddy dance until her legs were sore. Like, it gave me this imagination for the idea that, like, a boy would like me specifically and notice the things about me that, like, I think no one else notices about me.
What song do you think encapsulates this the best?
Definitely maybe.
Definitely maybe.
It is my just the opening bars make my heart like makes me want to kick my feet.
Wow.
I met a girl named Tara and she lived in the heart of America. She liked Black Caddies, listened to Puff Daddy, danced until her legs were sore. She worked around the corner at a diner with the grouchy owner. And her boyfriend Shady dates another girl named Katie. He loves her definitely, maybe. Don't think I can take it, wake me when it's over. So far away, I wish that it was closer. I see her every day, I'm too scared to go over. I wonder what she'd say, I barely even know her. And how much longer will this keep getting stronger? I wonder what she's doing when I'm singing myself to sleep. Cause he's a
God.
Wow.
Just imagine being Tara.
To be the object of affection of, yeah. of these nice Canadian boys. Christian yes, Canadian and boys.
Yes. And I think it's like, I think what was so like radical about that for me was like being raised in a moment, well, not even a moment, being raised in like an institution where it's like the concept of your gender as a man needs to marry the concept of the gender of a woman.
Yeah.
And not just because you guys like each other, because you'll be like suited spiritually and like on the same level spiritually and you'll be like a good match in all these other ways and you'll desire each other hormonally, et cetera, et cetera. Like there was a sense that like you should like your partner. Actually, there was a sense that you should be like attracted to your partner, but just to be liked, a man likes a woman. He just likes her. He likes things about her. He likes her music. That was so.
And that felt like a shocking notion at the time, because are you connecting to it in the sense of the specifics of she likes this and she likes dancing and
that he like sees her, that he sees her, he like observes her, he sees her, he notices the thing she likes. I think it's shocking to think that like, it was shocking to think that like I could have a Christian boy who like really, really liked me and not just like wanted to pursue me because he was supposed to because I was a girl and
wife
he was a
option there, like, 14 it's yeah it's
and,
you
and yeah. there like I grew up in a moment where like all that stuff was like really codified in purity culture, like you were kind of supposed to date, but you were supposed to date a very specific way and you were supposed to pursue and you were supposed to like have this like grand mission that God has for you in your life and all of that, and I was like okay I can do that, but like the deep feeling inside of me was kind of like that's sort of like where your life starts but also where like your interiority ends.
Mm-hmm.
Like Little Women, Betsy Tacy, Little House on the Prairie. It's like the writer, the woman who has like all this vigor, like she gets married and then the book ends. Like that is it. She did it. She's a wife now. And so I think it kind of just opened up in my like 13-year-old tiny little body.
Oh yeah.
Just imagine how small, like the idea that like you might find someone who just like also just really, really likes you and knows you and sees you, like mm-hmm. sees things about you that you think no one else sees. And you guys could get together.
What
and
a nice takeaway.
I honestly don't know if that's what they were going for.
I don't know either, but that like, was the effect of it sounds positive.
Every song that isn't them pining is basically a skip for me. I would like listen because I would be like, this is important and I want to like do right by them. But like whenever they're pining for a girl, it just feels more real to me. It feels like they care more. It feels like what they actually wanted to do. Because this is like, they're a spinoff from Thousand Foot Crutch, right?
Thousand Foot Crutch was the main project. Yeah. And then this was sort of the side project. Yeah.
So like my imagination for them is that it's like, okay, great. We're like Christian rockers. So if we have like a Christian rock anthem, if we have like a, we need to change this nation, whatever, like all the good, like all the like bops of that probably went to TFK. My like imagination mm-hmm. for them is that they were like, I just also really want to write a song for Tara. And I can't on like the TFK persona because it's not about God.
Sure.
Like they mentioned God. I listened through and I counted. They mentioned anything Christian or God like twice.
It's really only in the one song in Something to Believe yeah. in, right? Or did you catch
yeah,
another one?
Yeah, Something to Believe in. Don't want to spend my life. I'm figuring out that I could have just said one prayer. Yeah, references God. The first one is in Crazy Mary, which was, Crazy Mary is such a skip for me.
All right.
I feel so bad for her because the whole thing is like, this woman is an alcoholic who has a horrible life and I have to minister to her. So I would like pity listen because I like, I really should listen to Mary's song.
Yeah. I mean, it really answers the question, what if proud Mary wasn't proud, but she was crazy? With lyrics like, Crazy Mary is a slow girl who looks up to no one and would do anything for a cold one.
For a cold one.
So this is, and yeah. if Caroline, may she rest in peace, if Caroline were here, she would rightfully point out the fallen woman genre. The fallen girl, you have so much to give and you don't even know how wonderful and beautiful you are. Genre yeah. of music, this completely lives within.
Except for she's like, also like an addict.
Sure. No, and she needs actual help. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. I always pictured, my 13-year-old self always pictured the bird lady in Mary Poppins. She's just sitting there on a bench, an alcoholic, and FM Static is like, wow, she really needs help.
That is Crazy Mary.
So yeah, I would pity listen.
The thing with this album, and we've talked about God or girlfriend tropes and sort of writing the line, a lot of this does strike me as, we're all out of Reliant K. Is FM Static all right? At the restaurant. Almost like Reliant J.
Or Reliant Pepsi. They're absolutely the Pepsi of it. And although I would argue if you just use their discography of FM Static's discography versus Reliant K's, I would say that FM Static, I think, likes girls more. Well, just, like, likes them as people slightly more.
Sure. I mean, that you're saying there's nothing as egregious as a mood rings to be found in FM Static.
Or I guess they have, like, women are the vague person that Reliant K would be, like, Sunny with a high of 75, mm-hmm. like, outside bopping around with. So I guess they're there.
Yeah.
But is there a Reliant K that pines? Show me a Reliant K that pines.
Oh, sure. I bet there is. No, we've talked about, I think there's some pine songs on that.
Is there? Okay. Well, then good for them.
I mean, Sadie Hawkins Dance, there's a little pining on that, I would say.
But that's more about him wanting a girl to want him. It's not about him, like, loving her and being alone in his room thinking about her.
It's not about him loving a gorgeous 13-year-old big-eyed girl getting her hair straight for home group.
With the straightest hair at home
group. You're right. I know. You want to listen, so it's the straightest it's ever been in your life. It's like piece of paper.
I do think that was helpful, though, because I think that the things that we let into our life when we're really young, like, do teach us, like, they teach us how to love. Like, they teach us how to imagine love. And so this imagination for a love where a guy, like, really, really likes me, like, for whatever reason, did come true because I was, like, too scared to go out with guys ever until one, like, really, 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 really liked me enough to, like, be piney enough to, like, sit around. But, like, yeah, like, my first love was like this, right? Like, this is what it felt like. I felt like, oh, I actually feel really safe and I feel like you, like me and see me and like the little things that... I don't know. I don't know what the relationship is to, like, the things we consume when we're young and then the, like, how we recognize, how we clock love when we're older. I know it's supposed to be our parents or whatever, but, like, maybe for a little bit it was FM Static too.
I think that's so nice, even if that was probably...
Thanks, guys.
...beyond the... Thank you, FM
Thanks
Static.
Thanks so much, guys. He just, like, really wanted to have sex with Tara, and I'm over here like, oh!
Yes, these two nasty, horny little evangelical boys.
They're just so horny.
They're like, so horny. I can't talk of her body, so I'll talk about how she loves Puff Daddy. They do love, I will say, speaking of Rory Lorelai, they love themselves a pop culture reference, don't they?
They really do. And isn't that horrifying, like, as a writer, to think, like, you don't know how your references are going to age?
Sure. Oh, in the, you know, and definitely maybe there's an allusion to... Not reading, but in the theaters, in the movie theater, watching Harry Potter.
Watching. Which also made me mad, because I was like, how come FM Static's allowed to be a Christian band and go see Harry Potter, and I'm not allowed to see Harry Potter?
I was wondering if that courted controversy at the time, a Harry Potter lyric reference in the song.
I think it would have if they were, like, mainstream enough, but I think FM Static was, like, their bad boy persona. Maybe TFK couldn't have seen Harry Potter, but FM Static, yeah. No one's paying attention except for me.
And it's happened in our lifetime where now... I would imagine Harry Potter, with all the trans hate of the author aside, even just Harry Potter as an entity is like is iconic cringe for Gen Z. That's like BuzzFeed, I can has cheeseburger crap.
Yeah.
I would
absolutely.
Imagine.
Yeah. Because everything's not cool if the person, the generation before, well, not the generation, it's like if your parents, oh yeah, we're parents. Oh, I forgot that world. Millennials are 40. So yeah. If your parents are into it.
Yeah. And there's some proud mama in San Diego naming her kids Ron Weasley. it's like, no, this
God
sucks.
God bless.
Most of the songs feel like they're pining after girls that they barely know.
That is true.
Or just complaining about school or wanting to get out of school.
Yeah.
Or
they're like these, like, they're like, this is their dirtbag self. They're like dirtbag Christian boys. And, like, just that grading on a curve, it just means they, like girls,
yeah,
and don't want to be in school.
That they'll talk about
play
them,
the drums.
And kind of come up with these narratives about them, definitely maybe is about, like, the guy you're with is definitely cheating on you. I'm better than that guy. October is sort of a almost like a 'tis the damn season ode, a little Notting Hill, an anthem to a girl.
Oh, October's is the girl you had a crush on in grade school, grew up and got famous.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I started developing. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, you can talk. I was just playing this.
I started developing a theory, like, was it Katy Perry? Because isn't she Canadian?
Oh, no.
And she dated... Oh, she's not.
She dated Matt Thiessen from Reliant K.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, if she dated Matt Thiessen, like, maybe they were kind of, like, all in the mix on the Christian circuit. Because she did the Christian circuit for a minute.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, I mean, listen, it's the lore of this podcast. I interviewed her.
Oh, that's right.
Like, oh, Christian artist, of course.
Do not speak to you of the dark magic. You were there when it was forged. Yeah,
I need to release that info. It's like buried in episode 4 of our podcast, I think. But I need to it's very weird that I interviewed Katy Perry as a 15-year-old girl, as an 11-year-old boy, or whatever the age gap is. Problematic age gap, I'll say. Problematic.
That was my theory, though. Who else would they see in Cosmopolitan? It felt specific. Her favorite day was Earth Day. She bought him a Boys in the Hood soundtrack for his birthday.
They love pop culture. They love it. They love Vanilla they Ice tapes. They love Michael Jackson, yeah. Puff Daddy, Chip and Pepper polo shirts, Harry Potter. They can't get enough of this stuff.
Do you know what a black caddy is? She likes black caddies. Listen to Puff Daddy.
Is it a Cadillac?
Oh, like a black Cadillac.
Yeah.
Oh, I just always assumed when I was younger, it was this will make sense when it's older. It's probably a sex thing or something. And then I finally got older and I was no, people have very weird references and make very specific metaphors that actually weren't that obvious.
I mean, if you Google black caddies, it does bring up the PGA's problematic racial history. It truly does. I don't think FM Static was making a reference to that. I could be wrong.
This woman, Tara, I love her. She's very into the racial politics of that.
Yeah, she was on the social justice beat 20 years ago. But then the rest of them, it's very, something to believe in. It kind of reminded me a little bit of a lot of Switch, less spiritual than Switchfoot. This is such a Christian LaCroix of a band in the sense of it is the patina of Christian flavor, not actual Christian flavor, in the sense of it's just sanitized a little bit. There's nothing disrespectful or rebellious at all whatsoever in the lyrics and in the songwriting of it. And so your parents would be okay if you came with this home. But there's nothing didactic. There's nothing preaching. There's no intention of messaging other than we like girls and, high school's annoying sometimes. That's the long and short of it.
This one to me felt I feel you can feel their ambivalence when they're singing about anything except for Tara.
Yes.
They're just really ambivalent about it. This to me felt there's every Christian band. I feel what's their name? Can't remember it. All I remember is Kevin. Letters to the President.
Oh, Larsa Hawk Nelson.
Thank you. Hawk Nelson has something like this. It's like the Christian punk version of Waiting on the World to Change. It's the we're the next generation and the world is so screwed up, man, and we deserve better and maybe we'll be better. But we notice, we see world, how corrupt you are. Which has to be nice because I feel that's the Venn diagram of actual punk. It's the world is so fucked up. And they're allowed to do that because as Christians, you're allowed to think the world is messed up. Mm-hmm. And so,
it aligns actually with a very a very round secular sentiment of man, some things have to change, I think,
There's a vague sense that, but I notice it's bad. I don't know how to change it, except for the Christian bands have to add in but if you got saved or God.
It's we actually know the answer. Whereas John Mayer's
have the answer.
Let's just jam out and maybe it'll be okay. That's more the sentiment. Isn't that funny how that intersects? I'm trying to think of other things that intersect. I mean, my first stereo, was this a skip for you, Janelle?
100%. Talking about, ironically, I always skipped my first stereo.
Because you did you feel threatened that he would like a big stereo with a juicy ass more so than...
God. No. Me. Pay attention to me. Yeah. My favorite day is Earth Day. No. Yeah. That was always a skip. I get the bit. You think it's a girl. And instead of it being about God, it's about his stereo as his first love. That's really cute for the first verse. But then you have to keep listening to the rest of the song.
But, Notion... And all the days, it's just let's hang out. Let's all have fun and hang out.
Another thing about them, they love a math pun. So
They like to do the 1, 2, 3 song.
Yeah.
3 days later.
3 days later. They do, and they do that a couple different places. They do it in You Can Hold Me Once, You Can Hold Me Twice, Even Better If the Stars Are Good Tonight, and Hold Me Twice. And in The Notion, I got The Notion. 1, 2, 3 times a lady. Yeah.
Maybe they're just counting. Maybe that's
kinda... Maybe they just love counting. It just makes them feel good, man.
I think
comforting.
You know, they put out a few more albums and then they went on indefinite hiatus in 2017, I believe. And then Trevor McNeven, or 2011, they went on a hiatus. Trevor McNeven is the only remaining member, but it's, you know, I think if a band hasn't done anything in 12 years, it might be legal to say it's defunct. At this point, did you mess with any of their later stuff? Was there any like hair straightening soundtracks? It was just that.
No one burned it for me, so no, it didn't exist as far as I was concerned. I didn't know 2017 was the latest they released something.
No, it's 2011. I'm sorry.
2011. Okay.
Yeah, their last record was "My Brain Says Stop, But My Heart Says Go."
So, are there any girls' titles names on it? Because I could check it out.
Well, unless there's a girl named Cinnamon, but I don't think so. No. "Hey, I Want It," "Lost in You," "You Don't Know Me Like That," "Last Train Home," "Black Tattoo," "Inside Out." No, I don't think so.
Gotcha. Well, they probably got married and then they stopped pining.
I love specific girls' names in songs, of course. We could play a game. That's a good party game, or like a road trip game, is like name all the songs. You can with a girl, with a woman's name in the title.
Have you ever wrote a pining
song?
You're a pining boy.
Whoa, hang on now.
you have some pine in you.
This is libel. I'm Chris Pine. That's what you're calling me?
Yeah, you know your way around a pine. Yeah, a very specific.
I've been in the piney woods for sure. Oh yeah,
things about a girl.
Yeah,
have you ever written them down?
Song wise. Yeah, in college and stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Famously, I gave a love poem to a girl named Brittany that I had a crush on outside of a Chili's when I was 12 years old.
Do you remember any of the specific details in it?
No.
Like, did you notice any specific details about her?
I remember that the font was a font I downloaded where all the letters looked like they were on fire. So it's called like Flame and Font or something. I don't know what it was called. I wish I could remember one line or one detail from it, and I'm glad that my mind is protecting me from myself and the notion that I can't. I absolutely cannot.
Don't worry, I'll always remember this now. But, yeah,
it didn't work out with me and Brittany. I mean, at least not yet. I play the long game though, so I don't know. We're gonna see what happens. No, we'll see. But no, I can pine. I can do a long-term pine too. I can do long-distance pine. I can do long-term pine. Mm-hmm. I can do ethically non-monogamous pine. I can't do poly pine. That's where...
What's the difference between... What's the distinction for you that crosses over to poly?
Well, poly could be like you're in a throuple.
Whereas I see.
E&M, none of you may know each other, but you just know that one person.
Right. It's discreet.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I am realizing the obvious truth that I married the boy who was pining for me.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's any attitudes or images or values from music I got in high school that would then inform adult feelings or visions of romance for myself. I mean, Springsteen was obviously so much a part of that. That's so boring to talk about now. But... I have been on a little renaissance kick with someone who meant a lot for a little bit in high school. And then I've kind of like dipped my toes back in. And now I'm going full bore with her catalog. Tori Amos. Did you like Tori Amos?
No, I didn't know Tori Amos. Where would you have me start?
Under the Pink, Little Earthquakes, okay. Boys for Pele. I think because I first hear her in the West Wing or something when I was like 13, 14 years old. I went to see her in a concert when I was 15 in Houston. And that's when I first realized that Houston had a thriving queer community.
Ah, imagine that.
Because I knew some like gay kids and I had gay friends growing up. But like that there were so many and they all came out for, you know, and it was a lot of different kinds of people. But that was... the predominant of that fan base, I remember that night. And her interrogation of religion, guilt, femininity, patriarchy, frailty, rape culture, all that stuff. I'm like, oh, wow, this is what I was listening to when I was 15. Why was
that? That's amazing.
And I've since,
no, that's wonderful.
I've since come back a little bit. I've been having a new renaissance with her, a new love affair with her the last couple of weeks.
I learned from someone that it takes exposure to a concept between like 8 and 13 times before our brain, it actually sinks in. So like a new word, a new concept, like a new reality. And so the idea of being like a Christian kid who has like a pretty like homogenous context, or at least like a context that's like really small and defined around you.
Yeah.
The idea that at, how old were you? You said
15. Yeah.
15. Like these concepts, the concept of rape as a thing that, you know, like these things getting to soak in early. I think that's lovely because it gives you like a head start. And it's like, that's like the actual number. It's like between 8 and 13 times. I was learning about that from like a racial equity like training person, because they were saying like whenever someone like has a realization in front of them, it's easy to be like, I did it, I'm so good, and it's like, no, that's probably just like the ninth time they heard
it.
Is
that funny?
And when they tell someone something and they're like really resistant, they're like, yeah, that was probably like the fourth, and like 4 times from now they'll start to like hear what's being said to them. Like I remember in college, this is so embarrassing, but like I am a child of like, I graduated high school in 2008, and people do not remember what like feminism was like at the time. Like it was still like, feminism is like a bad word, at least in Texas, in like very religious Dallas where I was. It was like, we're for equality, but not feminism. It's like, you know, that's like the whole thing. Right. I remember like hearing about feminism as a thing. It was like the third time I had heard about it as a freshman in college taking a class. Like the third time.
Is that funny?
It took like 5 more times for me to like start to understand some of the concepts. Like, I don't know. I guess I just feel really warm to like how music can be this like side door, this very like emotional side door into concepts and feelings that like when you're young, you have not felt yet, but you'll later be like, oh, now I know what Tori Amos was singing about.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
It's so beautiful. I wish I had that power. I like when you make theater, like you can kind of do that, but like songs are just so, so small and powerful and intimate. Like they're, it's like a poem. It's just like a whole little universe that if you just like something, if you like the drums in it, it might open you up to like just being softer towards a whole other part of the world you don't know about.
Yeah. And especially
that's so cool.
The canon of someone's work too, like a band like FM Static or a singer, like, a singer-songwriter where it's like, oh, this is like a universe you can live in.
Yeah.
And revisit, and you're going to go down these different pathways and intersections over time and have new discoveries and encounters with it and things that reveal themselves to you. And I will say, I'm glad that you found value in FM Static when you did. I think these are some of the most mid lyrics we've ever covered on the show. I think the melodies are fine and like it is like off the shelf punk, pop, etc. Actually, it sounds like we're getting into the rating of it. So maybe should we just like do that? Give it a roast or toast?
Wait,
or space between?
Wait, final
thoughts.
Will you just play the Fruitopia part?
Yeah, Fruitopia. Which song is that on?
It's the last one, Hey Now.
Okay.
Which was one of the songs in the CD. It's a hidden track.
Stars until the next day now. Is this it?
Day now, day now, yeah. You drank your Fruitopia and we never ran out of things to say now, say now.
I'm in.
Wait, it's the good part. Now, it's one more. Do for me, Kevin.
Every minute I'm not with you, I hope I'll see you soon. There's just something that happens
this is my favorite
when
part.
You walk into the room. And instantly I feel so complete. It hits me right about the time you kiss my cheek. And you give me this feeling, it's like no other feeling, but it knocks me off my feet.
Please don't that's all I needed.
Ask me what I like about you, cause it's every little thing.
Does this not sound like Brown Eyed Girl to you?
That's just the
sound like who?
Brown Eyed Girl.
Oh, yeah. You my brown eyed girl.
Yeah. Okay, I just wanted that. I wanted people to experience that. Yeah, okay, the lyrics aren't great. I'm an adult, but it makes me feel. It makes me feel, Kevin. And that is not nothing.
I think a lot of this podcast has been me confronting areas of guilt and shame for myself and things I wish I would have done differently and I haven't done. And I have not shared Fruitopia with a girl before.
Wow.
That's something I do hope to do one day.
Yeah, one day.
Because I do inevitably run out of things to say.
Yeah.
And according to this song,
yeah,
if I drink the Fruitopia with someone, then I'll never run out of things to say. So I'm looking forward to that. I don't know when that's
going
to happen.
And you know it was a Fruitopia because, like, what a humiliating beverage. If it was any other beverage, they would have used it.
You drank your Mr. Pibb and I.
This was my first hidden track ever, Kevin. The concept of hidden tracks hadn't occurred to me. I'm straightening my hair. I think it's over. And all of a sudden, they start singing. I don't know. I just like, thank you, FM Static.
Thank you. Thank you for your service.
You mean
service,
a lot to
your,
me.
Your Canadian service.
Yeah. I think as someone who makes something, if I make something that made one person feel the way I felt while straightening my hair, that's a success.
And you carry on their legacy in everything you do.
I carry on their legacy.
There's a little postscript in everything you make. Thank you to FM Static.
Yeah. She like doesn't know how she feels about like God and church, but she can proselytize FM Static unproblematically with like no remorse or questions.
What's the best hidden track of all time? I was just thinking about that. My favorite is Your House, the Alanis Morissette one from Jagged Little Pill. Do you know this one?
I don't know it. Send it to me. No.
Yes, I'll send it to you. Would you forgive me, love, if I dance in your shower? yes, I'll send you that. But be thinking about that.
If you have other songs that have pining in them that you think are better lyrically than hard to imagine, but better lyrically than FM Static, feel free to send my way. That stands for you too, listeners. Uh-huh. If you have any, if you want to make me have better taste, you can.
What a great genre, though. Is the pine, the piney woods of pining? Yeah.
Unfortunately, my like squishy gray matter in my brain has sort of already formed, so nothing will get in there the same way. But I can try.
Well, on that note, let's give it a roast or toast, Chanel. You know how it works. Holy toast, we give it a thumbs up, send it to heaven. Heaven-bound. Holy roast, a thumb down, we send it to. Or if we're not sure, we send it to purgatory, which is. The space between. You're our guest, so we'll start with you.
Final thoughts.
I don't want to be in heaven if this album isn't there.
Oh my God.
I'm sending it straight to heaven.
Peter at the pearly gates. Hey now. Hey now.
Hey now. Oh my God. Imagine when Tara gets there. We'll have so much to talk about.
And you meet her and you're like, you? And she's like really rude.
That's how I feel all the time. Like, you were at my wedding. You heard my vows. Yeah. Like, my husband, like, his love for me, like, foundationally changed me and made me, like, believe in grace. And then I talk about him, and then people meet him, and he's just a guy.
Yeah, he's like, hi.
Yeah, he's just some guy.
Yeah.
Tara's just some girl. But we'll have a lot to talk about. What about you, Kevin? I'm sure it's exactly the same and you love it and you're sending it to heaven.
I love experiencing things through the eyes of people that I love and care about, which would be the case for you. Or experiencing it through your ears, rather. Experiencing it through a young 13-year-old finding identity and understanding the dimensions of affection that she could one day receive from other people in specifics. Mm-hmm. And what to me sounded like almost incel adjacent anthems of why isn't this girl into me, that a young woman, a young girl could receive that as like, well, I should care to seek a man one day and a person who loves me for the content of who I am and my heart and my personality. I think that's beautiful that we could have two different takeaways from that. And that the height, the zenith of the other lyrics in the different songs were, let's have some fun and make commotion, or a sort of bargain bin summer of 69. And like, I'm love kissing my first stereo. I got my first real stereo with a juicy badonk. You know, there were things in it that while listening, I couldn't believe how straightforward some of the lyrics were. Almost like an intentional lack of poetry. All these days includes lines like, I gotta run now, go home and take a shower. We all can meet up at your house in half an hour.
Half an hour.
or hold me Kevin. Twice. I'm on the runway of a flight that's going one way on
Cross Your Fingers Airlines.
Now, and I need
that's
to.
That's clever.
I need to be honest about this. I have flyer miles on Cross Your Fingers Airlines. I have many miles I've not cashed in.
I have platinum status.
I for real have platinum status. So I see the angles of value here. Uh-huh. I must be true to myself.
All right. And send it to Hev.
I have to give this a roast. I do give it all a roast, unfortunately. Right.
I can love you. I love you. I just don't love the things you do. You know what I mean?
Like,
I love you as the sinner. I don't love this.
Well, welcome to Good Christian Fun. I think this is the beauty of art. The perspective that you projected and imbued onto this very, like, almost like flagrantly inoffensive mid music. Some of the most just like nothing songs we've ever heard on this show. I love that you could give it that. Genuinely, I think that's a magic trick. That you're art welcome. Can pull
is it
off.
About the beauty of art, or is it about like just the deficiency of being 13?
It's both of those things.
It is.
Because this is music for that time. They were not making music for a 33-year-old hypercritical annoying man living in Los Angeles.
Do you think they were making it for a 13-year-old girl, though?
Yes, 100%.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course they were. Of course they were making it for middle school and high school people.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Middle school, high school people, like it's a people group. I mean to say children and kids. Mm-hmm. There's middle school people all across this nation that I'm very fond of. I love that you gave this to me, and I hope I took care in stewarding my attention towards it.
You did.
Okay.
Thank you, Kevin.
Hey, you're so welcome.
And thank you, FM Static.
Oh, thanks to them. Big ups. I hope they get a Google alert when this episode comes out. And now we're bringing it down to a more worshipful space on other shows. Jean-Yel, you may plug yourself or promote your projects, but on here, we lift them up to the Lord, including our social media handles and perhaps something you're enjoying in secular culture that our listeners can check out. The last great thing you read, watched, saw, listened to, etc.
Oh, God.
So
the last thing I managed to make myself watch. You can find me on Jean-Yel Kastner, spelled like Jan-Yel, like Danielle with a J, Kastner, everywhere. Please send me your pining songs. And right now I am working on a podcast about evangelicalism in American culture that is right now about hell, but also secretly about my mommy. So it might end up being a follow-up to Untitled Dad Project, which is Untitled Mom Project, which is really just figuring out what it means to kind of want to believe as a person in America. You can find that one day, or you can talk to me if you want to about your very specific experiences of evangelicalism in American culture, and let me interview you about that. Thing that I've loved, I can't think of a single thing I've ever watched or read, and I know this was coming. I forgot it was coming.
And you can't say the last thing I watched that I loved was like my sweet hubby making dinner over the stuff. Like that's not
no, I would never.
Because we can't all watch that. That's to be something we all
also,
have access to.
As established, he's just some guy to you all. To me, he's a miracle. I've been sick, so I just fever dreamed watched like all of Bridgerton, just like the most classless stuff you can think of. Oh, everyone should read Bel Canto by Ann Patchett.
Okay.
It is about the transformative power of art in all circumstances.
Beautiful.
It is a gorgeous book. And it was her debut novel, and I can't imagine debuting with like that level of brilliance coming out of you. But everyone should read it. It's a gorgeous book.
Great.
I'd like to plug FM Static.
Yeah. Well, I think you have the last hour and a half, my friend.
You're welcome.
You can lift me up at Kevin Culture. T. Porter everywhere. I'll lift up. You know, on the subject that I was talking about before, Miss Amos, I'll plug a podcast called Drive All Night, The Songs of Tori Amos. They go song by song. They'll do 3 hours on one song by this person. It's a pretty phenomenal format. I was really impressed by this show. The editing on it, the research is great. The hosts are terrific. And they're really providing a capsule, a historical document. And I think more podcasts should follow suit, except for this one, not this one. We should not have any more research than we do. You can lift us up at Christian Fun Pod everywhere, patreon.com/goodchristianfun for more good Christian fun, and leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. Every review you leave, we donate $1 to charity. Sean Yell, thank you for supporting me during this trying time of flying solo. You were the best partner I could have had. Except for Caroline, you were the best partner I could ever have for this.
Thank you.
I appreciate you. And there's nothing left to say except for, okay, I love you, Emma. Amen. Now watch this drive. Ooh, it feels lonely to do by myself. I hope Caroline is resurrected next week. Janelle, what song by FM Static should we go out on?
Oh, definitely Baby.
Okay. And once more, here's the Ryan Reynolds movie soundtrack, Definitely Maybe. 2 minutes and 50 seconds of pure Christian sanitized punk pop bliss. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
She lived in the heart of America. She liked black caddies, listened to Puff Daddy, danced until her legs were sore. She worked around the corner at a diner with the crowd she owned.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.